Welcome to this special Italian wine podcast broadcast. This episode is a recording off Clubhouse, the popular drop-in audio chat. This Clubhouse session was taken from the Wine Business Club and Italian Wine Club. Listen in as wine lovers and experts alike engage in some great conversation on a range of topics in wine. If you enjoy listening, please consider donating through ItalianWinePodcast.com. Any amount helps cover equipment, production, and publication costs. And remember to subscribe and rate our show wherever you tune in.
Okay. All right, so we're going to just slowly get the room started. So, hello, everybody. This is Stevie Kim. You see that top little greenhouse? It says Italian Wine. So the host of this room is called Italian Wine. It's a new club. We've started it Saturday. So if you like to join, just tap on that, you know, button up there, and then you can join all the different programs that we'll be programming. We've been doing this about twice a week. In fact, I ran another room this morning and realized I'd been on Clubhouse for 6 weeks exactly today. And I've been organizing a couple of rooms every week, sometimes three. One room is dedicated mostly to Italian wine, as this one. This one is dedicated to Italian wine, hence hosted by Italian Wine Club, where we speak with mostly Italian wine producers. We did that with Sabrina and Marilisa Allegrini, with other wine producers. We did Etna, we did orange wine. Mostly, but sometimes, like today, we will dedicate the room to Italian wine specialists and advocates. So very pleased and thrilled about this session tonight, because we have with us tonight the very first master of wine, Gabriele Gorelli. I wish you can all applaud together. And his buddies, study buddies from Italy, Pietro and Andrea. It's pretty funny. I call them the three musketeers. As of Saturday, in fact, we have a club also called Wine Business. So we have two clubs, Italian Wine and Wine Business, where we talk about wine markets in general. This morning we spoke about Korea wine market, and next week we will be talking about Japan wine market. If you'd like to be updated about the next room schedule, please do follow us. You can do this by tapping on the greenhouse button up there, as I'd said before, or alternatively, tap on the two avatars, the first two avatars with the wine glasses on my profile. If you click on my profile on the bottom, on the very bottom left, that should lead you to the club. So let's get this started. Just as a quick reminder, this room will be closed in 1 hour time because, as you know, I like to keep it a little bit tight. This is not a room that will go on for hours and hours because I like to respect some boundaries. And please raise your hand after we've had the first round of panel introduction, and then I will bring you up to the stage and you can ask your questions. So let's start with, of course, the guest of honor this evening, Gabriele Gorelli. He is the master of wine. Welcome, Gabriele.
Hi, Stevie.
Okay, hi. So I know we just did a podcast with you, with Italian Wine Podcast.
This morning.
Right? We are torturing you, right? And also, I actually did an Insta Live with them. And if you want to see Gabriele Gorelli cry, literally, you can get a glimpse of that. That was pretty, that was so sweet. So, of course, you know, Gabriele's from Montalcino. He's 100% Brunello di Montalcino because, in fact, his grandfather has actually smallest winery in from Brunello di Montalcino.
He had.
Right? Is that true?
Until last vintage was 1998. But he used to be really small.
And then what happened?
And then many things happened. So my uncle, he founded another winery, but in another place, because my grandpa retired and he sold that half a hectare, and my uncle founded the new one in another place. So many things happened since then.
So, of course, congratulations to you again. We are so excited about, you know, what it means for not just yourself. I'm not being an altruist, you know, for Italian wine, of course, so and Italy. Yeah. So, listen, let me just go a little bit, you know, easy first softball question to you today. Okay. Do you think that it's possible to identify kind of like an overall Italian wine style? I said softball.
Yeah, I do. Because I think Italian wine styles, especially if it's red, it will carry a certain sort of assertiveness to it, which is often referred as higher acidity than usual, a more reserved sort of fruit expression, a more subdued sort of fruit expression, and it is often thought but that Italian wines have these strong, firm tannins, usually, you know, and abundant in quantitative wise, but even a bit drying and coffee-like in qualitative and nature-wise. And so, yeah, for the reds, I think we can sort of make a difference, make a distinction between, of course, the New World, but even between the European wines, Italian ones will be a bit more assertive. I think this is the word that describes that wines better. On the white wines, I think we still can make a distinction. Possibly because I've been teaching in Bordeaux last week, and those people sort of realized, the WSET diploma students sort of realized at some point, wow, the wines from the north taste warmer than the wines from the south when speaking about Italy. This is something that really, really sort of sprung in their mind. And I think they're totally right. And they after that, they didn't taste never the same after. So I think by the time you realize that Italy stretches so far from a latitude point of view, from you know, the region of the north to the very top bottom end of Sicily, but you realize that usually the warmer the wine is, the oilier, the weightier the wine is, probably it comes from the northern part, and the leaner, the more vibrant and pure it tastes, and mineral too, flinty tastes, it's probably from Campania, so from altitude sort of region.
Okay, so thank you for not getting so completely geeky on me, but since you mentioned WSET, of course, as you know, I've started my WSET diploma journey at this tender age. It's quite painful, I must say, but and I know that they don't dedicate terrible a lot of time, a lot of space for Italian wine. So my question to you is, are the international education programs like WSET, Master of Sommelier, even Master of Wine that you've just completed, giving fair weight to Italian wine?
Oh, speaking about WSET, I wasn't into it until last week. As I told you, I've been asked to teach to two groups just preparing their diploma exam in April now. And these two groups were composed of various people, so merchants, exports, salespeople, and everything. So a very heterogeneous sort of group. And these lessons should have been lasted like 8 hours to cover the whole Italian peninsula.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it is. Absolutely, it is crazy. And that's why the friend of mine, so Fanny Darusek from WISP campus in Bordeaux, she allowed double the time to cover this topic.
Oh, that's interesting. But I think that was an incredible exception, because you know how they're so rigid.
Yeah, they're so rigid. And I had the opportunity right before getting into the classroom to, take a look at the educator's notes. So it is a very, it is an eye fly over the Italian peninsula. You cannot really go down deep in certain topics. But it is a sort of, in Italian we call it infarinatura. So you just be teased about what Italian wines are like. But with double the time, we had the opportunity to investigate even other factors, which are the traditional, not only the climatic factors that influence the production of wine in these regions of Italy. And also, we are not entitled to cover all Italian regions, but on just a few, I would say not more than eight. For example, Emilia Romagna is not covered. Lombardy is not covered unless you speak about Franciacorta, but for still wines, they're not covered. They don't cover, for example, Val d'Aosta and so on. So WSET, and this we are talking about the diploma sort of level, so the highest level, it's still a sort of unobtrusive sort of program as topic of Italy. Speaking about Master Sommelier, I think from what I understand, these people are pretty much focused on the fine wine industry. So Italy for them is especially Piedmont and Tuscany. Not many more styles and appellation are covered, because these two I just mentioned are the ones that really are the stars throughout the fine wine industry. Speaking about the Masters of Wine, I think the Institute is increasingly working with Italian wines because of inner curiosity in them. I should say in us, since a couple of weeks now. But of course, there was a general misconception about Italian wine that they're trying to solve, because they need to be as open as they can to understand better how it is the Italian wine panorama changing. And speaking about the exam, I think we got several Italian wines, an increasingly high number of Italian wines in the exam that often are deemed to be neutral varieties, and so not to express, not to be as distinctive as one could think, like a Sauvignon Blanc from the Marlboro, to be clear on the real world. So they try to sort of pave our way through the tasting of these wine, but it is still, I don't want to say embryonic sort of approach, but it is, once again, increasingly covered in this study program, which is fine.
Great. Thank you for that, Gabriele. I know we have two Masters of Psalms in the audience. One is Kim Sum, and then there was Fred. I think he's just disappeared. So maybe they can chime in later. And I love this because I can correct you, the Neo Master of Sommelier, because in the WSET program, the way they had organized in the diploma is that Lombardia, so, Oltrepo, and is actually covered with Lambrusco in the sparkling section, which is a completely different section. So that's why they're not even mentioned in the Italian section. So just FYI. So now I would love to go to Pietro. So Pietro Russo, he actually, I mean, I call Pietro and Andrea and Gabriele the Three Musketeers because they started together the MW program. He can correct me, but they're really a great ambassadors for our country, Italy, because they also have revised the new edition of Sotheby's Wine Encyclopedia, the three of them together, the Italy chapter. So that is really, really exciting also for us. He is 100% Sicilian from Marsala, and he is also from a wine family, and he's currently the winemaker for Donna Fugata, which is, of course, the famous winery in Sicily. And he's done basically harvesting everywhere from Bordeaux to Languedoc, Andalusia, to Marlborough. And of course, he's done about 20 harvests or so. And so we're very excited to have Pietro with us. So Pietro, my question to you is, first of all, welcome. And how can newcomers approach the complicated world of Italian native varieties and denominations?
Well, hi, Stevie, and thank you for inviting me to join this room. First of all, I think that the huge diversity of the Italian wine country is a value. We all know that it's an opportunity compared to other countries. However, this complexity can represent a threat for newcomers and for those who want to discover more about Italian wines. So complicated. So, you know, Italy is not an easy country. It has an immense variability of cultivars, appellations, and I think it can confuse even more engaged wine consumers. So the main change and effort should be done in this direction to simplify things, and simplify things especially for wine consumers, but also for wine professionals. So I think that approaching Italy through each of its 20 regions should be very difficult. It can be very boring, but also frustrating for a wine lover or wine curious. So what I might suggest is to stop approaching Italy from north to south, from region to region, but start to approaching Italy as a whole and through its wine style. And I say this because the reason is that we can find similar style from north to south, and this can help to create bigger categories, but also to simplify the message to wine consumers. An example of the main style that we can recognize, I've done a short housework, and I think we can recognize among 8 to 10 main styles. And for example, the full-bodied austere classic reds, so Barolo, Barbaresco, Amarone, Montalcino, Chianti Classico. If we stay in the reds, there is the light-bodied fresh reds, such as Valpolicella, Frappato from Sicily, Schiava. Then the luscious, fruity and smooth reds, such as Primitivo, Ripasso, or Nero d'Avola. And then we can consider inside the sparkling category with the Italian method and the traditional method. So the most important, you know, Franciacorta, Trento, Altalanga too. And then another category, for example, the rosé and the sweet or fortified wines. Of course, this is a simplification, but I think that this can be a good starting point for newcomers because it's a systematic approach and it allows to have a bigger picture of Italy as a whole compared to treating as a region by region and then sub-region and then the smallest appellation. Then if a wine lover is ready for the next step, if he's curious enough to go through it, he could decide to go inside each region and to discover the myriad of appellations and their autochthonous varieties.
Great, thank you, Pietro. So let me now move on to our next panelist, Andrea. He's kind of the wise man of the Three Musketeers. Welcome, because he is vintage 74. He's currently, of course, the COO of Bertani Domains Group from Verona, but they have estates all over the country. I think he has been studying with them, with Gabriele and Pietro since the get-go, right? And he is, let me just mention that he is also the board member for Consorzio Valpolicella and Vino Nobile. So he's very much hands-on, both from the geeky aspect, but also the commercial side. So my question to you, Andrea, is, you've tried various jobs across the wine industry, sales, communication, managing, operations. What is changing in the past 20 years, or maybe even 10, for Italian wine industry?
Ciao to everybody. Thank you to be part of this room. First of all, I want to say my congratulations for Gabri to have his incredible statement with the Master of Wine. But also, Dr. Russo Gabri is doing very well. Have you seen? He has a very good speech tonight. He's improving a lot. So let's go back to your question, Stevie. I jumped inside the wine business in 2003 when I joined Gruppo Italiano Vini, that was one of the largest, that still be the largest one Italian wine group with wineries all around Italy. And my first job was in the U.S. in Frederick Weimar, so I was actually working for the importer where GIV was in was partner inside this lovely company that was focusing, especially in the past, in importing French wines, top quality French wines. And after that, started in the late 90s to import also all the GIV portfolio. What I can see, and the big change that I see in the Italian wine business, especially when I have a look out of Italy, so how people they have, they can really understand Italian wine business, is that today there is the wine world recognize Italy as one of the leading producers, not only in terms of quantity, but especially in terms of quality. And what is also very important and what really changed in the last 20 years, there is a perfect balance between Veneto, Sicily, Tuscany, Puglia. So in every region, you can really find some very important appellations that are recognized as the top quality wines all around the world. And there are also some other appellations that are probably more focused in more volumetric side. So that is my first point. So there is a better balance if you go across the country between the different regions. When in the past it was probably more, the South was more focused in the quantity, Veneto was a mix, and Tuscany and Piedmont was only related to quality. The second very important point, I think that is related to the managers that we have in the wine industry today. I think that in the past, when I started to work in the business, most of the key wine managers in Italy, they were coming from the production side. When today there is a perfect balance between people that come from the production, people that are coming from the marketing side or the commercial side. And then I think that is an important aspect, because we can have winery that are totally grafted in the product, and there are some other wineries that are totally grafted in the commercial approach. And this combination today give to Italy a more interesting opportunity. And finally, the third point is related to climate change. Thanks to the climate change, Italy today can produce wines with a quality level that is higher than in the past. It is higher, especially in order to enhance the potential and the identity of the Italian indigenous grape varieties. 20 years, 30 years ago, it was not possible to produce is Sangiovese as we can produce right now in Tuscany, and can really express the different terroir that you can find across Tuscany. But on the same time, you cannot produce a Valpolicella as we can produce right now. And that it will be similar for other appellation that you can find around Italy. So this is another important. A lot of time we are saying that there was an increase in terms of technology, in terms of methodology, and the quality aspect of Italian wines are coming more from the technique. I would like to say that there are a lot of aspects that gave a lot of quality, give an improvement in terms of quality to the Italian wines that are related to the climate change and to the fact that until now, climate change was in some way very positive for Italian wine business.
Thanks, Andrea. That's great. Let me just quickly reset the room. We're talking about how to taste Italian wine like a pro. And we have three pros with us today. They are all, two of them are still finishing up their master wine studies. And of course, Gabriele Gorelli just last week became officially the master of wine, first master of wine of Italy. So we are 25 minutes into this room, this chat, this call. If you would like to ask a question to our panelists, Pietro, Gabriele, Andrea, please raise your hands and I will slowly bring you one by one up to the stage. We've started this room is being hosted by Italian Wine. So if you'd like to join us on the next program, please tap on the house, that greenhouse above, and join the club. Alternatively, you can go on my profile and you can see the first two avatars. We have two clubs, Italian Wine and Wine Business, so that you can be alerted every time we create a new chat. So we have Marilisa with us. We did a room with her last week, Woman in Wine series. We did the Amarone, and it took me some time to get her, first of all, onto Clubhouse and then, teach her how it works. But it seems like she's a pro now because I see her everywhere. Welcome, Marilisa.
Ciao, Stevie. No, I like very much to listen to Gabriele, Andrea, and Pietro tonight because I think that is very interesting from the point of view of a producer to understand how the development in terms of knowledge of Italian wines can bring more attention to the wine that we produce. Because I think that even if we hope or we think that the Italian wines are quite well known among discerning consumers, I think that there is much work that needs to be done. And of course, Master of Wine, they are fantastic in promoting the production of this beautiful country, thanks to the diversity that we have, and also thanks to the difficult part of the knowledge, because being a country that is so complicated in terms of rules and also in terms of flavor, in terms of taste, from north to south, from east to west, they have an incredible task and an incredible job to do. So thank you very much to let me participate, but I like to listen.
Well, this is the first time you say you like to listen. I think I'm very lucky tonight. Thank you.
I'm not like you, Stevie.
Thanks, Marilisa. So let me just reset the room. This is Italian Wine Club. We're talking about how to taste Italian wine like a pro with the new master of wine from Italy, Gabriele, and then his study buddies, Pietro and Andrea. So if you have a question for any of them, please raise your hand. I'll bring you up to the stage. Ciao, Lan. So Lan Liu, of course, is a, and let me just, that reminds me, I see a lot of our ambassadors in the audience. Hugh Priest, Melissa, I saw quite a few others. Thank you for joining us. And of course, they are listening very carefully. Lan is our Vinitaly International Academy coordinator. And what I would like to ask everybody, if you are very keen about promoting Italian wine, I've created this club on purpose on Clubhouse. So you should invite many, many producers as possible. That's what I've been trying to do, so that we can make this platform a very strong and efficient and effective platform in the name of Italian wine. Len, you're up next. Have you got a question for our panelists?
Thank you, Stevie. First of all, congratulations to Gabriele, and also a big shout out to this study group. You guys are amazing. So I have a very straightforward question for Gabriele. During this journey to MW, I'm so certain that you've encountered people from all over the world. So what are the common misconceptions about Italian wines from them? Thank you.
Hi, Len. Thank you very much. There are many misconceptions, and I think I've been touching those points when I was talking about how and if it's possible to recognize an Italian wine in a blind tasting style-wise. I also been talking about that in the introduction of the 5-star 2020 edition, which we did with Stevie in June of last year. And I think the general misconception you can get on the red wine from Italy is that those are firm in tannins, overly tannic, over and non-fruity, more played on the textural part compared to the aromatic part. And usually they are dried out or drying out. This is something that we need to work on a lot, because we are perceived as a country, especially like Spanish wine as well, are perceived as a country that have a strong oxidative sort of attitude for the wines. And this is, of course, a misconception, but it is founded in the truths, probably back in the times, mostly. So this we can counteract, saying that now we produce more contemporary tasting wines, red wines. The general misconception about white wines is about their neutrality in aromas, their neutrality in bouquet, their sort of undistinguished character on the nose. And this is something we need to, you know, be aware of, because it is so difficult for many people from outside Italy, and I think even for us that have been living here for most of their lives, that you could well recognize one style from the other. Pietro, beforehand, he was talking about the different styles of red wines. We do have different laterals, I would say. So styles in the white wine area that are similar one to the other, and probably they're not as distinguishable, as discernible as the wines from the New World, because I think the variety doesn't really shine through in Italian wines. What shines through is the Italianity, if you pass me this term of the wine. So there is a general way of approaching especially white varieties that privileges more the expression of the territory or the terroir, as you like to call it, compared to the expression of the variety itself.
Okay, great. You know, I asked Kyungmyun Kim Sam on his avatar, and also Fred, because we had he's the other MS, because we were talking about the Italian educational program in the WSET as well as Master of Wine program. And You know, I know I've just started my diploma journey just because I'm curious. Of course, you know, I run a school dedicated to Italian wine, so I'm very, very partial of Vinitaly International Academy. I've been doing that for, and about 1,000 people have gone through the program. But I wanted to ask Kyung Moon, what is your opinion about the representation of Italian wine in terms of the curriculum for the Master of Somme program?
Thank you for bringing me in. I mean, for the quartermaster sommelier, you can still sort of divide the sections into a theory portion versus a tasting portion. I believe Gabriele mentioned we focused on more of a prestigious wine. I mean, yes and no. At the same time, we want to focus on wines that are available in pretty much every market. And I mean, to be frank, I mean, for Italian wines, it's been, I mean, ingrained in U.S. market for a very long time, but very little accessibility in other regions, for sure, mostly in the Piemonte, Veneto, and Tuscany, not much of representation in outside. But, I mean, there are a lot more influx of unique wines coming from south, from Puglia, Campania, and Sicily, that a lot of sommeliers are interested in. But as far as the core curriculum goes, I mean, we stick to more classic wines. Because for blind tasting, we only have 25 minutes to analyze six wines from sight nose to palate and conclusion. So we have a very small time to assess. So we want to make sure that candidates are able to pretty much nail the wines down to the point. And that's why we are focus on more classic wines. But as far as the theory portion, we do study pretty much the whole continent to DOC, DOCGs, and many particular producer all around Italy. So we do cover as far as theory-wise, but due to a limited time in tastings, unfortunately, we don't have expanded on that realm, but mostly focus in like Amarone, Piemontese wines and Tuscany wines, and maybe some white wine from northern Italy. But I mean, we are always trying to reevaluate our program. So hopefully, in the near future, we can include some other exciting Italian wines as well.
Thank you very much, Kyung Moon. Just for those who are unfamiliar with Kyung Moon, he ran Changshik. Restaurant group. Of course, it was the 2-star Michelin Korean restaurant. He opened it in New York, and then he directed the wine program for The Modern, and now he's becoming kind of an entrepreneur, half in wine and half in entrepreneurship. And we ran a room this morning about Korea wine market, so you should reach out to him if you have any questions about any of those topics. I would like to just reset the room. We're talking about how to taste Italian wine like a pro with three Italian pros, Pietro, Gabriele, and Andrea, the study buddies who represent the Italian flag for the Master Wine Program. And finally, I think it was very much of a group effort in a way. I don't know if I can say that. And Gabriele Gorelli has become the first Master of Wine for Italy. We're all so excited about that. So this is kind of in celebration of this happening, if you will. So now I'd like to welcome Jill Gordon-Smith. She also has a WSET diploma program school in Australia. So she's a perfect person to chime in. And also she is our Italian wine expert for Vinitaly International Academy, as well as a winemaker with Italian wine grapes in McLaren Vale. Hi, Jill. Welcome.
Good morning. Excuse my voice. It's very early in the morning.
What time is it?
Well, it was 5 o'clock when I got up, and I'm just waiting for the sun to come up because I'm picking Arnace today. So that's pretty exciting. Just want to say congratulations to Gabriele, and I am waiting in anticipation for Andrea and Pietro to pass their MW. I'm sure that's going to happen really quickly. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about the diploma, because I've just come straight off of teaching the Italian section with our WSET diploma. And I agree with Gabriele, it was an 8-hour session, but being the coordinator, I actually spread it out to 2 days, which gave us a lot more time to cover, you know, some important information and to really dive a little bit deeper into the regions. And I think that it's really important we do that. And I've got to say that my work with VIA and my studying with VIA actually gave me a different approach to teaching it this year. And I did look at, you know, more of a grape-based approach while still giving everybody, you know, taking off the curriculum. But Gabriele made a really interesting point about Italian wines when you're tasting, that they have an Italianness, and they do. But last night I did a really interesting comparison. So I had Cristiana Tiberio's beautiful Cerasuola d'Abruzzo, and I make a Montepulciano in a similar style. And I had some friends over, and we were looking at the wines side by side. And even though there was a definite Italianness about Cristiana's, and it was actually much better than mine, there was the grape shone through. And I think it's because with VIA we've been focusing on that grape by grape approach. And I could really see the characteristics coming through in the glass, which was really nice for me because that's what I was aiming for. So I think it's definitely a combination. There is that Italianness that you know straight away. For me, it always gets my stomach ready for food and gets me really excited about the flavours. But I think the grape variety, you know, the winemaking now, the grape variety shining through as well as the terroir, which is always going to be there. So it was really exciting.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much, Jill. And I brought Andrea Ebbi up to the stage because she's also a Vinitaly International Academy ambassador, but she now coordinates the Italian Wine Scholar Program, which is another program. So I wanted to kind of have her weigh in on all the different, when we talk about VIA, for those who have no idea, who are completely clueless what that stands for, is actually, we're talking about Vinitaly International Academy. So Andrea has kind of her feet on both programs. I wanted to have her chime in as to what her opinion was in general about Italian wine education.
Thanks for asking me up, Stevie. Congratulations, Gabriele, a huge achievement and one that I'm at the very beginning of. So looking forward to someday being hopefully in your shoes. I know I'm really blessed to have had the opportunity to become a VIA ambassador. And like Jill said, just having that sort of foundation, a grape-based sort of foundation of Italian wine. And now working with the Wine Scholar Guild, and they kind of work in a more sort of appellation-focused way. But I really feel like it gives me a very sort of well-rounded approach to Italian wine, having both of those sort of focuses. But, you know, we recently just launched a sort of more introductory level course to the wines of Italy, because we really felt that Italy can be a little bit daunting to the sort of average consumer. There's just so many great varieties and so many wine regions. And we wanted to really try and give a way for the sort of average interested consumer to learn about Italian wine and really sort of hook them into the food, the culture, the history, and the wine, and hopefully sort of propel them into higher learning and into wanting to know more about the wines of Italy and just, you know, becoming great ambassadors in their communities. And so I think, yeah, it's a big topic, and it's it can be daunting, but there's just such a world of discovery out there for people. And I would agree with Jill and the fact that, yeah, there's these kind of stereotypes that some people have about Italian wines, and you know, as VIA ambassadors, it's our job to kind of dispel some of those myths and show everybody the potential and the character of Italian wines today.
Thank you, Andrea, for sharing that with us. Let me just quickly reset the room. This is the Italian Wine Club. If you'd like to join us, just tap on that greenhouse on the top to join us, and you can get the alerts for our next rooms. So let me ask just kind of a more of a fun question, if you will. Pietro, What are, give me your three favorite Italian wine and food pairings.
Well, this is a tricky one. There's so
many. It's not tricky. It's not supposed to be. It's not an exam. This has to be a little bit fun.
Okay. Let's say only three, right?
Yes, only three.
So I will start with Verdicchio, I think. One white. Verdicchio, for me, it's such a noble variety from market that... capable to produce really delightful wines that are shining from their use and then show great ability to age in bottle, and because they develop so nice tertiary aromas. So Verdicchio, then...
The food. What food goes with Verdicchio?
Well, what we can pair. For sure, the great... seaside food from markets unbeatable for to pair with. I would say, just to make a tribute to Andrea, a nice Valpolicella, a base Valpolicella with their...
Okay, be careful because we have another person from Valpolicella in the stage.
I'm not saying the top, but I just really like... the vibrancy and juiciness of the Valpolicella Classico. It's seems like an uncomplicated character, but it can really show nice depth and salinity. And then I have to pay tribute to my own town, to Marsala. That is probably the most difficult wine for consumers.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, what? How do you pair Marsala? Like, what kind of food?
I think you can... have so many opportunity to pair Marsala with. It's you can start with the classic pairing with cheese, with the dried or old aged cheese. You can pair with chocolate. You can pair with cigars. You can pair with you can pair also with oysters. So it's up to you. It's such a flexible wine that it's a pity that it's such an underrated today. So, but I am pretty sure that will rise in interest among consumers.
Okay, Gabriele, no pressure. What about your favorite Italian wine and pairing?
Well, I have to expand on Pietro's Verdicchio plus Moscioli, which are... you know, distinctive.
Can you please, listen, I don't even know what the hell Moscioli is. I'm not sure.
Yeah, this is something that you need to go to the Conero, because it's something unique to the Conero. And usually food and wine pairing are the traditional thing you can find. So you may have to go to the actual region and to check what they're doing there, because it is usually the best pairing you can get.
That's actually interesting. So trust the locals when you're pairing Italian wine, right? Because
yes,
it's kind of a tried and, you know, method of the pairing. But what is Moscioli? I mean, seriously.
Moscioli is a sort of seafood. I don't know how to explain that. Possibly somebody from the markets in the room can actually tell, but it is a... sort of, I cannot really afford to explain that.
Because yeah, I can't believe you are the new master of wine. And you, I mean, seriously. Okay, what are the other two wines and food?
It's like mussels, huh? Okay, we can say it's like mussels, but
okay,
it's
right,
a distinctive type of mussel. Okay, 65%. Then, I think I need to pay a tribute to my homeland. And when I say I don't eat a lot of meat, but when I eat it, I'd like to it to be very good. And like a Fiorentina plus an old Brunello, it's something that really makes the difference. So that's my first. And then I like Barolo or Barbaresco with the plain pasta. So it's like the ragu, small tortellini, which they're not calling tortellini there, but it's their specific style, very savory style of meat and pasta with egg. And I wanted to say marsala as well because it is so highlighted,
like,
but I won't.
I don't understand. I you want Pietro, Verdicchio, marsala.
No. I wanted only to expand on Pietro's food pairing. Okay, the Verdicchio thing, yes. It was something that I could put in my bucket list as well, but okay, I'll leave it to Pietro. Just I was expanding on the moscioli thing. And then I think the last one should be a Trento doc. But the Trento doc, it's a style for its freshness, for its inner energy. And as I told you before, its assertiveness. It is a fine wine to be enjoyed alone, but with good company. So no specific food, but with company of people, I mean, relationship. This is food for thought, is food for the mind.
Okay, great. Listen, same questions to Andrea. Before Andrea speaks, you have 10 more minutes. We're going to close the room in 10 minutes. So if you have any questions, please come up, raise your hand, and I'll bring you up to the stage. Andrea, okay, save me. Three wines, your favorite wines and food.
Start by something from Tuscany, from the coast of Vermentino.
Oh my God, I can't believe you guys are like in symbiosis. Vermentino,
the citrusy aspect and the salty character that is inside of the wine, it is perfect if you have a classic branzino or something, classic orata that is very, very good. It's combined the saltiness of the sea with the saltiness of the wine and the citrus, the sucrosity aspect that you have in the palate that is really outstanding for me. The second one, it's from where I come from, is the Valpolicella. The crunchiness and the sweet spice that you have in Valpolicella, for me, it's lovely if you have a risotto or a traditional classic pasta with light pasta, so a very fresh light pasta. Even if you have with pesto, it's working very well for me. Valpolicella, the new modern style of Valpolicella, or let's say the contemporary style, with a lovely red cherry and sweet peppery, white peppery note on the nose. And the last one is probably related with a special wine that I made a few years ago when I moved to Vulture for a few years. I was involved in taking care about a lovely winery, Terra de Gislevi, in the slope of the Vulture volcano. And when I came, I found that 30 hectares of Vergusta Tramina, and was planted many years ago for a Swiss company in order to import aromatic wines in Swiss. And actually, we started to work very close with these old wines of Vergusta Tramina, and I really enjoyed the Vergusta Tramina with asparagus. That is a difficult match. Asparagus are difficult to match, but there is a possibility to match very well with Vergusta Tramina, especially when it is bone dry, and it is lovely when it is a bone dry. For me, it's a great variety. It is a little bit too strong on the nose, but when it is made in a very bone dry way, it's quite interesting.
That is interesting. I'll think about that next time. Listen, let me just remind you that next Thursday, same time, 8 p.m., we won't have wine producers. We've had Allison Napius. She's this senior, of course, editor for Wine Spectator. She covers the entire Italian country except Tuscany and Piemonte, which Bruce does.
So she will be coming up next week, and we'll be doing kind of more like a fireside chat with her next week, 8 p.m. She's also actually this tasting director for Wine Spectator. So that might could be interesting also, even just for everybody in general. So join us next week for that with Allison Napius, 8 p.m. next week. Okay. Jing, I would like to invite Jing up to the stage. Welcome. And do you have a question for the panelists?
Thank you so much, Stevie, for having this. So I have a quick question for everybody. So in my opinion, I love Italian wines very much. So for the Chinese wine marketing, we could say, like, in my personal opinion, there used to be like Bordeaux wine fever or Burgundy wine fever. It's still going on now in Chinese wine market. So, but in my opinion, I didn't see like such kind of fever with high-end wines and the regional wine fever in Chinese wine market for Italian wines. So in your opinion, in the future, as a Italian wine community, what should we have done to promote such kind of promotion in Chinese wine market, create our own like such kind of vibe? Thank you.
So who would like to take this question? Pietro, Gabriele?
I'd like to say a couple of things about that. I think that, I feel that, you know, that there are fevers in the Chinese market. Now, yeah, we're seeing an increase in the Burgundy side. But as Italian wines, we just are sort of scratching the surface of this incredible market. And I just think that the message, the identity and the distinctiveness of both Burgundy and Bordeaux really prevails on any other Italian style for the moment, because it is such an easy way to communicate their, facets, their features. I think we need, in a way, for the new consumers, and not talking about the millennials, I'm talking about especially Generation Y, I think we need to tweak the communication, the way we talk about the wines, in order to have a better response. So we need to stimulate the curiosity of these people, because those are very curious. I remember in another room, we were talking about that 20,000 WSET students every year are Chinese. So it is a huge amount. And this really supports the fact that these people are curious. They just need the correct message to be conveyed to them. We need to work on that. And this is done only doing joint ventures with people that are residents, with people that are in a way expert already of what can we convey as a message of distinctiveness about our wines.
So just as a side note, as I think, I don't know if the audience is aware, you know they've banned at least they paused WSET program in China at the moment. And from what I understand, at least from the consortiums, and maybe I don't know if we have time for Marilisa to weigh in, but they are now treating the consortiums and regional bodies as NGOs, just like the way they've treated WSET, and they have paused all types of promotional activities in China. So probably we'll need another room for that. But I would like to now go to Renee. And that will be our last questions. I know few of you have still raised your hands, but we won't have time. So hopefully we'll get them back another time to ask your question. So Renee, what is your question?
Hi, Stevie. Thank you for bringing me up. And hello to everyone. What a lovely conversation this has been. My question kind of leads into the conversation that we'll be having on Saturday as well, but I wanted to get everybody's opinion since you're tasting Italian wine. What have you guys experienced? So like, if you could pick like a great varietal that you've experienced being grown outside of Italy, like maybe it's Nebbiolo or maybe it's Nero d'Avola or something with that, what are some key things that you think stick with that great varietal as Italian grapes become more world-traveling varietals and planted more in other regions of the world.
So Renee's referring to a room that she's organizing, and both Jill and I will be participating Saturday. It's 6 p.m. Italian time. I don't know what time it's, for Renee.
It's 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and 3 hours back for PST. And wherever you live, please calculate.
Yeah, so we she's hosting a room talking about Italian grape varieties planted in globally. So this will be the last question, and we can kind of have a last round. I'll start with Andrea, Gabriele, and then Pietro.
It's a lovely question. I think that Italian grape varieties in the future, they will play a very important role in the wine world. There are some reasons related to genetic, and there are some reasons related to the fact, as I told you before, that there is a climatic change. Italian grape varieties, especially some white, as Vermentino, as Verdicchio, can be quite interesting for the future, especially in warmest place where they have a problem with acidity. And actually, if you move to Australia, they are planting in warm region this type of grape varieties, especially they're focusing in Vermentino and also Ribolla for Friuli. From the red side, I see I have a difficult opinion to express a real terroir out of Tuscany for Sangiovese, but there are some interesting grape varieties as Nero d'Avola or Frappato from Sicily that can really move away. And there is another incredible Italian grape varieties where a lot of interesting wine region in the wine world are looking for, that is Aglianico. Aglianico is a grape variety that probably need a warmer climate than where it is growing right now. So it can really be something interesting in order to postpone and delay the harvest time. And in some places, especially in warm climate, I'm thinking South America, but also some part of Australia can really play an interesting role.
As a surprise, we also grow Aglianico in Canada.
very good.
Gabriele?
Yes, I think to expand on Andrea's opinion, I think, yeah, we have such great opportunities around the world to, you know, let the grapes that made our reputation, good or bad, in a way that it's new, it's more contemporary. I like the fact that Aglianico can be planted in a variety of climates. So late ripening variety, so it's both suitable for cool and for warmer climates. And also these varieties, which once were neutral because they couldn't reach the flavor ripeness, especially for the whites, are now more expressive. And this, once again, represents a great opportunity for getting the Italy out of Italy, because there are Fianos grown in the Basket Range in the Adelaide Hills. There are Nebbiolos grown in the Yarra Valley, for example. And it is such a good wine. And if you go for that wine, you need to sort of import even the winemaking skills and the winemaking props that are proper of Italy.
Pietro, you have the last word. And let me just remind everybody, next week, Thursday, we'll have Allison Nappius from Wine Spectator, the tasting director from Wine Spectator, and also Italian taster, senior editor from, and we'll do more like a fireside chat. That's on Thursday next week, same time. And then on Wednesday, 2 p.m. Central European time, we'll be talking about Japan wine market. Pietro.
Well, you know, I work in Sicily in such a Mediterranean, warm, dry climate, and I work with autochthonous variety, but also with international varieties. And I can really confirm this climate changing issues and concerning, and So autochthonous varieties are already adapted to these dry farming conditions. So I think this will be an increasing trend for outside of Italy, for sure. You have seen California, you have seen already Australia, so big with Nero d'Avola, but also with Fiano, Vermentino, and so on. And then also because I think these varieties can really respond to the increasing interest of consumers for new trends, new aromas, new styles. So I think they will really achieve a great consensus among the wine board.
That's great. So now I've invited a few kids from the office and some ambassadors up to stage. I want everybody to open their mic now. Everybody open their mic. Everybody open their mic.
Can we shout?
Yes, because we want to say congratulations.
That was good, Stevie.
Listen to the Italian Wine Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We're on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Himalaya FM, and more. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the show. If you enjoy listening, please consider donating through italianwinepodcast.com. Any amount helps cover equipment, production, and publication costs. Until next time, cin cin.